There is no psalmist that captures better the Christian's heart's reflection than the psalmist David. God used the events of his life to deeply engrave his truth into David's heart, and David then pens many psalms which reflect that very thing. One such psalm is Psalm 40. And let me read to you the first five verses of Psalm 40. Beginning with verse 1, he says this, "I waited patiently for the Lord. He inclined to me and heard my cry. He drew me up from the pit of destruction, out of the miry bog, and set my feet upon a rock, making my steps secure. He put a new song in my mouth, a song of praise to our God. Many will see and fear and put their trust in the Lord. Blessed is the man who makes the Lord his trust, who does not turn to the proud, to those who go astray after a lie. You have multiplied, O Lord my God, your wondrous deeds and your thoughts toward us. None can compare with you. I will proclaim and tell of them, yet they are more than can be told." And so here David is expressing his heart when he considers God's dealings with him. Now let's just very quickly remember something of David's background. By the time of the writing of Psalm 40, he had already experienced being hunted down to be killed, of course, by King Saul, which is our subject in Sunday school. So many of us know more about Saul than what I'm just saying here. But having said that, he had lost his best friend. He had lost the son born to Bathsheba before the writing of Psalm 40. So he knew what suffering was. David was not unacquainted with grief and heartbreak. And so we come now to these first five verses. And in verse 1, we have the basis for his rejoicing in the rest of the passage. In verse 1, it is this, "I waited patiently for the Lord." I waited patiently for the Lord. Now in Hebrew, the first word is doubled. And so it literally translates, "Waiting, I waited." And the doubling emphasizes the earnestness, the constancy, the intense patience that David experienced in waiting on the Lord. We have a similar construction in Luke chapter 22, verses 14 through 15. I'm reading from the King James. It says, "And when the hour was come, he sat down, and the 12 apostles with him. And he said unto them, With desire I have desired to eat this Passover with you, before I suffer." Note the phrase, "with desire I have desired." There's the doubling. What is the Lord saying? Well, he's saying he longed with all his heart to be with the 12 prior to his crucifixion. The English Standard Version actually captures this a little better. I'll just read verse 15. It says, "And he said to them, I have earnestly desired," there it is, this intensity, "earnestly desired to eat this Passover with you before I suffer." And so David is saying he waited intensely, constantly for the Lord. Now the question becomes this, what does this waiting mean? If he's doing this intensely, and if it's the basis for all of his rejoicing in the Lord, then what exactly is this waiting? Well, the root Hebrew word means to bind together. To bind together. The word used here always has a sense of expectancy. And I can give you an illustration of that. Genesis 49:18. Where Jacob says, "I wait for your salvation, O Lord." And so there is this expectancy that comes along with this waiting. Now, what is meant then when it says bind together? Well, David's waiting is looking back over his life and seeing how God had laid everything out, how God had directed and preserved and protected him all along the way. And then there is this expectancy of future blessing from God. He knows that he's not begun to experience what God has in store for him. And so what we could really say is this. David was saying that he knew that all things come from God, that these things bind him more closely to God, and that he was expectant of spiritual blessings yet to come from God. This attitude permeated his whole person. So he could wait patiently, knowing that God would carry out his work. That's the idea. Now, before we can go any further, we have to recognize that this idea of rejoicing in the blessings of God that you see throughout the Psalm 40, that whole idea must only be or must be the fruit of our waiting patiently on God. And so if we are going to experience the same thing, then we must do what David did. We must patiently, earnestly wait upon the Lord as David did, knowing that through every circumstance, God is binding us closer to him. Do we believe that? Do we believe that through every circumstance, God is so working that we shall come forth as gold? You remember what Job said in Job 23, verse 10? But he knows the way that I take. When he has tried me, I shall come out as gold. There it is. Once we have David's attitude, we then can recognize the things that David recognized. Well, what did he recognize? That's the rest of these verses we're looking at this morning. What exactly did David recognize regarding God and what he did for him? Well, number one, he recognized the special love of God. In verse 1, he said, I waited patiently for the Lord. He inclined to me and heard my cry. He inclined to me and heard my cry. What does it mean? Well, the word inclined means to bend over and listen attentively. It's a word you would use if you were listening to your child. And let's assume the picture is this, a small child of maybe 4 to 6 years old or even a little bit, but you have to bend over. And they are saying something to you or they have a request, but you bend over to listen and you listen attentively so you can understand it. Well, that's the idea we have here. What he's saying is the God gives him the listening ear of a parent to a child. And so David says, my heart is full of praise because I know my God takes a special interest in me. Now, would we bend over and listen as attentively to every neighborhood child as we do our own? And the answer is no. And what David is saying is this emphasizes the fact that I belong to him, that I am his child, and that he loves me with this special love. But then he says, he heard my cry. This hearing carries the idea that it's not only just hearing what is said or what is cried, but it is also a hearing that evokes an answer. So not only did he hear, but he answered. And what we have then is that these actions only come from one who specially and fervently loves his children. And so David knew that quite clearly. How did he know that? Because his life was permeated with this one principle, I wait patiently on the Lord. Well, David also recognized the deliverance that was his in verse 2. He says this, he drew me up from the pit of destruction, out of the miry bog and set my feet upon a rock, making my steps secure. Now there is a fascinating picture in verse 2. The words pit of destruction and miry bog actually picture a large pit that is filled with mucky, miry, dirty water. It would be very similar to what we would call quicksand. And what David is saying is, I was caught in this quicksand, and I was totally submerged in all of this muck and this filth. This is my position, or was my position anyway. But he says, God delivered me. God rescued me from it. You see the picture? He sees that only God could have rescued him. Now, if we were to take that picture and apply it to us, does that not tell us about our own salvation? We were in a pit of destruction. We were in the depths of filth and mire. And yet God, by his grace, rescued us. And he set our feet upon a solid rock. But it's not only salvation. What David is saying is, this is true of every affliction of life. Every affliction. We can rest assured that God is our deliverer. Therefore, we are never in danger of being swallowed up by the pit. That's the idea. Instead, God has set our feet upon a rock. We stand firmly in the midst of this world. Now let me again talk about that word set. What the word set means is make to stand. And David is saying, God has made me to stand. Now that's in contrast to our standing in our own ability. There are those who would like to say, well, you know, I pulled myself up by my own bootstraps. I got through this particular problem because of my wisdom and my insight and all of the other things. But David knew clearly that the only reason he made it from day to day, from circumstance to circumstance, is because it was God that set him in order. It was God that set his feet upon a rock. He goes on to say, God made his steps secure in verse 2. The word secure means that he ordered and secured them. He ordered and secured them. And David was praising God for his present circumstances because God had ordered and secured them. Stop and think about that a moment. I don't know what your circumstances are. You don't know what my circumstances are, totally. We all have private issues. And then we look at those private issues. Do we realize that God, if you're a child of God, God has set these things in order. He has ordered and set them for your good. And that's what David was saying. Whatever our circumstances are, if we are children of God, they are ordered and secured by God himself. It's the very best thing for us. It is hard for us to understand, is it not? Extremely hard. But the circumstances are used of God to make us more like him. But not only that, David goes on to recognize the fact, because he waited patiently upon the Lord, he recognized the fact that God had put a new song in his heart. Verse 3, he put a new song in my mouth, a song of praise to our God. Many will see and fear and put their trust in the Lord. He placed a new song within him. What was that new song? It was praise to God. That's what he's saying. That new song was praise to God. What does David mean by that? Well, what he's saying is that God has transformed him. Prior to the Lord working in his heart, he would have never praised God. He could have cared less about God. Or let me put it to us, prior to your conversion, you would not have cared anything about praising God. That wasn't uppermost on your mind. Prior to your conversion, you had no desire to please God whatsoever. When you got up in the morning, you were simply saying, how can I live this day so as best to be happy and financially secure, if that's for that age? We tend to live for ourselves prior to conversion. But David said that God had transformed him. His motives were different. His desires had changed. And so because of that, he wanted to please God, because God had placed that desire in him. Now look at the powerful result of that. Many shall see it and fear and put their trust in the Lord. Let me just say this very quickly. One of the most effective testimonies that we can have as Christians is changed lives. This transformation makes David, and we could say makes all children of God, truly blessed. And so you come to verse 4. Verse 4 says, blessed is the man who makes the Lord his trust, who does not turn to the proud, to those who go astray after a lie. Why? Why are we truly blessed? Because the child of God no longer, first of all, respects the proud. Say, what's he mean by that? Well, what he's saying is that the child of God, he or she, does not have any connection to those who are unsaved. And by connection, I mean this. They are not influenced by. They do not desire to go after and to emulate their life like those who are non-Christians. That's all changed. They have no interest in the things of the world in that sense. They, in a sense, reject the proud. But then you have the word lies. That refers to anything other than the truth. That's pretty clear. And so what David is saying is this, anything that distracts him from the truth, he avoids. Or we could say it to us, anything that would distract us from the truth, we ought to avoid. A Christian is not turned aside by lies, by that which is less than truth. Rather, he is concerned about truth. Truth is at the core of his life. And what do we mean by truth? It means the basic content of the Bible. That's what we mean by truth. The change in a Christian is so radical that their hearts are filled with praise because they can see what they never could see before. And what is that? They can see the greatness and goodness of God. And so we go to verse 5. He says, you have multiplied, O Lord my God, your wondrous deeds and your thoughts toward us. None can compare with you. I will proclaim and tell of them, yet they are more than can be told. There's the end of it. Seeing God as we have never seen him before. Prior to conversion, I had no idea in any way, shape, or form of who God was or what he wanted. And really, I could care less after conversion. When you begin to see how God has so ordered your life and so ordered the circumstances of your life and so preserved you through those circumstances, you come to the conclusion that the Lord has done wondrous deeds in working with us. And it ought to be our desire to proclaim those deeds wherever we are. Now, before we close, let me ask some quick questions just to personalize these first five verses. Do you think the first thought on David's mind was verse 5, we just read it, when he was being chased by King Saul? Was that the first thought on his mind? The obvious answer to that is no, it wasn't. Or when Abraham first entered the promised land with Sarah, do you suppose he was thinking that God had secured his steps? Go back and remind yourself of that history, Genesis chapter 12. What happened? God had called him to the promised land. Got to the promised land, there was a famine. And so it drove him south into the land of the Egyptians. And what did he do? Because of his fear, he told Sarah to lie about their relationship. Was he thinking the things of verse 5? You have multiplied, O Lord my God, your wondrous deeds and your thoughts toward us. That was far from his mind in the moment. Or when Elijah the prophet heard that Jezebel sought to kill him, do you think he was consumed with David's declaration in verse 5? Oh, Lord God, your wondrous deeds and your thoughts toward me. And the answer to that is no. No, he was afraid of Jezebel. They, like us, get caught up in the moment. We tend to be absorbed and consumed with the moment. It's impossible for us to see the divine loving care that surrounds us every moment. But what David does is that he reminds us that in the worst of circumstances, God is in control and he is working wondrous deeds on our behalf. And how do we get there? How did David get there? Because we go back to the first part of verse 1. He waited patiently on the Lord. He looked back and he saw all that God had done. He can see it from a historical standpoint. He now expects and looks forward to what God has promised and said he was going to do. And because he waited patiently on the Lord, he could come to the reaction and response of verse 5. We may not see how God is working in our lives, but we can know it is true because he has said it. So let's take the posture of David and wait patiently on the Lord, knowing how he has secured us in the past and expecting great blessings in the future.